The Tribe Tech Podcast. In collaboration with Stephen Scone. You can get in touch with us by tweeting TechSWOfficial.
Okay, so welcome to the Tribe Tech Podcast. I'm Fayaz Khan and I'm with Robert Hillier. We today are at Exeter College's Heal Road, which is going to be the site of the Southwest Institute of Technology. We're very happy to have Rob Bosworth with us. He has been with Exeter College for about 20 years. He's the vice principal of, is it curriculum?
That's right, yeah.
And a bunch of other
and
things.
Partnership, school engagement.
And Deputy Chief Executive, which
and
is
the Deputy CEO.
I also want to say thank you to Stephen Scone, who are making sure that this all happens. And I just want to remind everyone, please remember to subscribe to the podcast so that we know how many of you are out there. And most people seem to be listening at the moment on Audioboom, which is lovely. But, you know, you can listen to it very easily on your phone, on Spotify, on iTunes, on Tunes Radio, wherever you normally get your podcast.
Yeah, it's all there. So what we're talking about this month is a really important topic, which is about skills and talent and retention and recruitment and the future economy. And that's something that you're really focused on here at the college. I think I'd like to know from you, having been here for the time that you've been here for, how have you seen that curriculum focus change over that period?
I think the probably the most fundamental thing for me is I think education was quite isolated and quite siloed. I think the thing that I've observed the most is how the community, it's a bit cliche, but at heart we're a community college. It doesn't matter kind of what size you are or what you look like, you're a community college, so you should serve the community. And I think what I've seen over the last 20 years is the growth of Exeter as a city, the raising the profile of the Southwest, and we continue to do that. But the college really looking outwards and reaching out into the community and trying to reflect more what the community needs, because the traditional kind of route of doing GCSEs at a school, then an A-level, then going to university, the market's much more diverse now, and that's fantastic for young people. Very confusing for parents, and we have to work really hard on that, but actually it's a great opportunity with more curriculum on offer and different types of curriculum for employers to come in and say, we'd like to work with you on that, and sort of break it and disrupt it. And I think that's a good word for it, actually, disruption, because I know there's a lot of that in the tech sort of companies and in the tech landscape. I think education is being disrupted at the minute with some brilliant qualification opportunities, but they're only as good as kind of what the community needs. So a really good example is the fastest growing qualification we've got at the minute is our high level apprenticeship level 4 data analytics. So we started it about 18 months ago. We started with 6 companies in Exeter, and we've now got 64 apprentices in that. All adults, various ranges, not all 18. We've got everything from 18, 24 year olds, 45 year old, and people that one was a plumber, now wants to do data analytics.
Wow.
Because the we all know kind of the statistics and the data that shows that young people are going to have 4 or 5 careers in different sectors. So where it'd be that have one kind of career path and 4 or 5 promotions, maybe, now already we're seeing people kind of moving at all different ages.
That portfolio working, as it's called, isn't it? Yeah, which
that's
is
right,
a prediction, yeah.
Yeah.
So those people who are coming here to do that, have you marketed that at them, or have they themselves become aware of the challenges and the changes to the workforce, and have they sought you out? How has it come to be that that growth has happened?
I think the key driver for it all, and we mentioned earlier about the Southwest Institute of Technology, and it's a key driver of that as well, is employment. And again, this is kind of, obviously read the Tech Southwest kind of study on skills and kind of the feedback from the employers. For me, employers are at the heart of everything here. So yes, if you want to go to university and kind of do a degree and go down a more traditional route, that option is still there, really popular. But the boom in apprenticeships and particularly use of the levy in large employers, for me, has really unlocked opportunities for employees to get more involved in the curriculum design. So I think they've wanted to do that, and there's been a will to do that. And we often get feedback from the private sector and kind of the employment kind of landscape saying, we'd like to the qualification to be different. I think pre-18, that's quite challenging because it's quite a fixed model. Post-18, with the new high-level apprenticeships, degree apprenticeships, there's a real opportunity for co-design, and that's the critical element to it. So in the Southwest Institute of Technology, we've got Oxygen House, which is a big sort of data company. Obviously, we've got the Met Office, which is a huge data company. We've also got TDK Lambda in Barnstaple.
Yeah, we've spoken to them because they won an award at the Tech Southwest Awards.
Which is great. And they partner in partnership with Petroc. And we've got Babcock in Plymouth, but obviously Babcock's a large conglomerate and they've got a massive high-level manufacturing need. So the key drivers of your curriculum, if it's successful, should be the employer. Because like I said, it's totally cliche, but at heart we're a community college. You know, we're a large community college with a lot of learners and a lot of people in it. But actually, if we're not serving the community, then we're not doing justice and it's not following the purpose, really.
So it's apprenticeships that are actually helping you stay relevant, because a report by Tech Southwest a couple of years ago found that because courses take such a long time to design, by the time they're out, they're not relevant anymore and things have moved on. But I suppose with apprenticeships...
That's it. And the game changer for me, I think you're spot on. There's a great opportunity with T-Levels. So T-Levels, obviously, with Exeter College is launching in September. We're recruiting now, so we've got some interest in the three pathways that we're doing. They've been employer-driven from a more national central base. So the large employers have worked with kind of the designers for the specs, but it's more centralised in terms of the cascade. When that comes out, that's going to be a little bit more tricky to change, but it's going to have a work experience component to it. The game changer for me is the real focus on technical. So T-levels are brilliant in terms of a parity. So in the past, what we've had is we've got thousands of students doing A-levels, and parents still feel like their son or daughter will be successful if they do GCSEs and A-levels. What we start to see with the technical agenda being raised, and the Institute of Technology is a really good example of that, but through T-levels is a real parity of a level 3 equivalent. So the game changer for me is a focus on technical, but out of that, we're so excited at Exeter College about the high level apprenticeship, because we've got a range of companies now, for example, doing the data analytics I talked about, from small to medium enterprises to kind of large conglomerates. And the reason why is because this isn't about kind of STEM anymore. This isn't about kind of branding something. Technology is everywhere and it's in everything. So the days of you saying, we've got a STEM fair, go over to the corner if you want to be in a STEM subject, it's in every subject.
If somebody says, I want to work in tech, it ceases to mean anything, doesn't it?
That's right.
It's not an industry.
And the tech
companies
kind of sort of frown at it and sort of look in the sky as if to say, that was kind of 10 years ago. Yeah. Everything's tech now. It really is as simple as that. So digital skills are just going to be fundamental to everything. We're just embarking on a digital transformation strategy, which I think everyone's going through in the world. But we've got an ambition that all our community within the college, so all our students, our staff, our stakeholders, will all be digital citizens by 2025. Now, to be honest with you, we're going to do everything we can to enable that to happen, but we're doing a values-based sort of driven approach, because fundamentally by 2025 everything will be digital anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So the operational kind of delivery of qualifications will change. Obviously there'll be more blended learning, I think, but fundamentally the employers at the minute are doing a great job in talking to us and saying this needs to be different. That's really helped us with a high level apprenticeship, because like you say, this is less about kind of being at college 4 days a week and having 1 day work experience. 4 days in work and 1 day at the college really works well, because they get the kind of theoretical knowledge and they're in the workforce kind of doing this live. So the apprenticeship higher level game changer, whereas you used to go out and talk to employees and say, take on an apprentice and you can help us work and shape it. They used to go, well, a 16-year-old might not be ready, a 17-year-old might be ready. Well, actually, we're talking about 25-year-olds and 30-year-old people actually changing the sectors and saying, I loved maths when I was at school, but I didn't know what to do, so I became a plumber. So actually, now these amazing opportunities are arising. I actually want to move sectors.
So you're saying, well, it's mostly older people who tend to come here for apprenticeships, and what do the younger people do? Because I wonder how...
They do apprenticeships as well, yeah.
Because I just wonder how you convince parents that that's the right way forward, because I know that I sometimes, when I used to teach as well, and I'd find that parents found it really difficult to accept that apprenticeship was a successful and probably better route to go, because you weren't going to get into debt in the same way you would if you went into university. But how do you market that to them?
I also, because I was thinking the same thing as well about the kind of stigma, there's obviously the employers don't care. It doesn't seem that the vast majority of young people don't care.
Yeah.
But do you think that that focus on the social capital of going to a Russell Group university still means an awful lot to people? Or is that beginning to change slowly but surely? I mean, do you think it will ever go?
I don't think it'll ever go, and I don't want it to be honest with you. I think, like I said, the disruption in the market of education, if you like, is a great thing because it's going to offer difference. And I think in terms of that, there was a report, the barometer report for the Social Mobility Commission came out yesterday, and really it was great to see that people now think one of the biggest enablers of social mobility is actually apprenticeships, and it was great. But that's not to say kind of that higher education isn't having a massive impact as well. But the key thing is, in terms of parity in education and making an educated decision on what you study, that's what we need to work out, because you're right, the information, advice and guidance in schools isn't there at the minute, and they're not seeing apprenticeships as an opportunity. We've got to try and get some parity. I'm really excited about T-levels to do that. The question that you were saying about
marketing to parents,
it's just amazing, because the word kind of vocational is trying to be moved out, and we're replacing it with technical. I think that's a really good thing. Mm-hmm. I'm not kind of shy about that. I make it, because in terms of parity, when you say vocational, people think they couldn't get onto an academic route, so they took a vocational
route.
For years we've been trying to bring parity to it, because a lot of our vocational students go on to amazing things. A lot of them go into university, but a lot of them go into employment and become really successful. So a few years ago we had a young lady who was offered a place at Oxford University, and she turned it down to take an apprenticeship up in the finance department in the city, and now she's doing great and thriving. So we're getting little anecdotes of successes, but the challenge we've got at the minute, when I say apprentice to people in the sector, they get it. When I say to apprentice people outside of education, what do you think? You tend to think
somebody making the tea in a
high vis jacket, hard hat on. It's probably a man on a building site, and that's not what apprenticeships are all about.
No.
So we've got a real interest in kind of the tech. We're doing software development as well as data analytics, and obviously doing a bit of cyber as well. And we're getting real interest from a lot of females coming through and taking this as an opportunity and disrupting kind of the demographic in terms of kind of people being really successful in it. So, and we're supporting a lot of local initiatives like the Girls at Code. There's some brilliant things going on in the Southwest, in Tech Southwest as well. We're really excited about working with. So it's not about kind of a 16-year-old standing on a building site with an Ivy's jacket, hard hat. And any image you see like that, we've got to stop using, because the world doesn't look like that anymore. What we're actually seeing is people of all ages, men and women, going into data companies, going to finance companies, and really disrupting, because obviously they've got this new world tech that they've been brought up with. So actually, in terms of the role of education, it's interesting you were saying about how do you keep up with the skills. The kids are coming out with the skills, we don't need to do that.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's more about kind of the opportunities to apply those skills kind of in the work setting. So a garage is just going to use data analytics as much to count their stock and kind of work out kind of how much they need. That's as much about data analytics as forecasting the weather in complex algorithms for the Met Office. So
do you think, whether there are 130 universities in the UK, and they're all chasing a ever shrinking market due to demographic factors and other things, and they can't sort of compete on price because they charge $9,250 a year, and that's what they do, and they all do English and whatever else. So do you think it's the colleges and that ability to be agile and respond in that way and work much more quickly with their local markets and their local businesses? I think, is that a lot to do with the success and why there's been such a growth in further education while higher education is struggling a little bit?
For me, it's about partnerships, it's about collaboration. So we're really lucky in Exeter, we've got a world-class Russell Group University that thinks differently. So a lot of world-class Russell Group University thinks in a more traditional way. We work really closely with Exeter University on a skills escalator where the college and the university work together to oversee a lot of the schools in Exeter through the TED Reg Trust. So we've got seven schools at the minute in Exeter, and because we can kind of support them in terms of the information, advice and guidance and give them a clear escalator and pipeline, that means we can take people from schools into the college to a university if we need to. Now, whether they go to Exeter College or another college or Exeter University or another university is irrelevant. The fact is they can see kind of like a clear line of sight into where they're going. So from my perspective, I'm a massive believer and I'm a real ambassador for further education. I think it's forgotten about a lot, but actually collaboration and partnerships and civic structures are really important to me. So in Exeter, we've got a really clear education ecosystem we always talk about, where the schools are schools. The college does the sixth form and apprenticeships.
Because there's no sixth forms, are there,
in Exeter? And the university is really clear that it's a type of university that doesn't actually compete with Exeter College, but works perfectly and complements. So if you line all that up, Exeter has actually got a really great ecosystem. We're working really closely with Plymouth at the minute and some of the schools in Plymouth to look at something similar. So it's a really exciting time for us. But for me, I think a lot of people would love us to say further education is the way forward, not higher education. It's not like that at all. I think the two have to work together. Choice is really important. The thing that we've got to work really hard on, and like I said, we're lucky we've got the University of Exeter looking at degree apprenticeships and very much a partner with us on the Southwest Institute of Technology. We're really working together to work with employers to say the days of like you having to kind of wait for someone to get GCSEs, A-level, go off to university and come back are gone. What you can now do is work with us to actually design this curriculum and co-design it, get the young people through an apprenticeship, whether it be pre-18 or post-18. So we've got a lot of 16 to 18 year olds and apprentices as well. But the game changer for me is, what do they do post-18? They can be at Russell Group University, work in employment, and that's a win-win. The employers are loving that. So the employers are coming back to us now and saying, this is a game changer, because I wasn't quite sure taking a 16-year-old on. They need a bit more worldly experience.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But an 18, 19-year-old on that's done A-levels and now coming into a degree apprenticeship or a high-level apprenticeship, game changer, because they bring a different dynamic to the workforce. They bring all this new tech that they're kind of using themselves. And the other thing...
And fresh ideas.
Yeah, and fresh ideas. And really disruptive, you know, in a positive way. I'm a really... probably hear me talking about it a lot, because disruption is really important. And I don't say that lightly, because a lot of more traditional kind of structures have not had disruptors. Mm. So if you get a disruptor on your board and someone comes and disrupts and says why, next time you don't invite them to the board, you think they were a real nuisance.
They're
what
annoying.
What I'm saying to you is you need some disruption in the market, like in any organisation, and obviously tech's brilliant at this, just to get someone coming in and thinking differently and saying, why are you doing it like that? And we're really lucky. We've got a brilliant relationship with the university, the Met Office and some of the big data companies. So we've got a lot of people on our board that are coming in with a new mindset and saying, why are you doing it like that? It can be different. The Southwest Institute of Technology, can I just mention that?
What I want to know about that particularly is how does having something called that, because all the elements of it exist, don't they? They're happening.
Yeah.
How does pulling it together in that way and giving it a name, how does that actually benefit and make a difference?
Well, the first thing is, let's start from the top. We talked about parity in terms of investment in technical education and skills. It was great through the industrial strategy that this came out as a statement to say we want more sort of industry-aligned technical education. And obviously they made an announcement to say we probably want 10 to 15 in the first wave, right the way throughout the country. We want large collaboratives. We don't want individual organisations. It was a great opportunity in the Southwest for us to work with our partners. So we're working with five different further education colleges, and Plymouth, Petrock, Truro, Bridgewater, and us. So those are the five further education colleges. The University of Plymouth, University of Exeter, all coming together. And basically the premise was, let's all go out and kind of bring an anchor employer around the table and really kind of start co-designing this from the bottom up rather than kind of getting the employees in at the end. So we work with TDK Lambda, Oxygen House, Babcock, and the Met Office, and they literally, right at board level, had to sign this off in terms of their commitment to this. And they're all companies that are really engaged with us and really passionate about skills. Yes, obviously there's a bottom line to this, because obviously they need people in the Southwest. It's the only thing that all the sectors will have in common is they'll struggle to get people and they'll struggle to get the right skills. So they've all got an interest from that perspective. But we're really lucky to have some directors around the table from employers that are actually really passionate about kind of getting kind of a pipeline going and kind of getting the right skills and investing in the Southwest. So what does it mean for the Southwest? Well, the first thing is, it's brilliant that we've collaborated together and we've got this. There's some brilliant partnership work going on in terms of across the colleges and the universities. I think it's the first time I've seen all these colleges and universities come together like this. And the benefit is any employer that comes to us throughout that kind of network, we can meet the need of it. So we want to expand, we want to work with other training providers as well. There's some brilliant small training providers that aren't around the table at the minute that we want to talk to. They're like to Cosmic, they're doing great things, and others, and other colleges as well. And this for me is an opportunity to have a brand that says technical education is really important, and by engaging in the Southwest Institute of Technology, you can get access to the likes of Babcock, some of the things that are going on in marine technology down in Plymouth.
You're listening to Tribe Tech. Tweet now, Tech SW Official.
How does it work in practice, the Southwest Institute of Technology? Once it's up and running, how will it work?
So basically, the actual concept itself is a special purpose vehicle, and the special purpose is to collaborate. There'll be capital investment. So you mentioned our capital investment out of the fund. Ours is a £10 million digital and data centre. There will be specialist capital resources going in Barnstable, at Petrock, at the University of Plymouth, at the University of Exeter, and down in Plymouth on the Docklands and Ocean Gate. We've got some really exciting things happen. So there will be a virtual collaboration. There will be a brand in which kind of we're talking about information, advice and guidance going out into schools where our college advisors and our careers advisors can go out and say, if you want to work in the world of high manufacturing and engineering or technical qualifications such as digital and data, this Southwest Institute of Technology is something that you need to be involved in because they've got a direct route into employment. So
has this been driven by the market that exists, or is the ambition to attract outside inward investment who will be able to see the Southwest as somewhere where you can get the talent and the skills and the people you need to help your business?
The funding's from the Department of Education, isn't it?
That's right,
Department for Education.
I think what you've just said is pretty much kind of the reason why we did it. So the first thing is there's amazing things happening in the Southwest and people don't know about it. So we're backing in the initiative for the Great Southwest, obviously. Working really closely, I should have said as well, it was remiss of me, I should have said them both. The Cornwall and the Heart of the Southwest
LEPs
are working together on this and have supported it. So think about kind of the Great Southwest together. You've got kind of an ambitious kind of proposition on the back of the industrial strategy. What does it actually look like in real terms? Well, you've got a collaborative kind of institute of technology that's kind of doing the manufacturing, high engineering. So at Bridgewater, they're doing really high level kind of manufacturing and welding. Specialist welding, and obviously that links into kind of the work they're doing with EDF and the nuclear development, clean energy. So we've got some really exciting things, and the engagement to kind of what exists is there. What does it do? It shines a light on the Southwest. You know from Tech Southwest that we've got some amazing things happening, and I've got to be honest that I don't think always in central government they see the amazing things that are happening because they don't see how connected we are and how exciting we are.
No, and I think as well, you know, there's the Northern Powerhouse, there's the Midlands Engine.
And the Southern one.
And then you pause.
because there's a lot of, you know what that means. And I think, you know, not, and also, of course, because I think historically, there's a lot of clarity over what the North does now. Of course, it's trying to change that image as well, as, of course, is the Midlands. But when you think about Penzance to Paul into Bristol, it's much harder, isn't it, to kind of quantify that as a location, you know, with a clear story to tell. Yeah. But this, of course, is
it helps the narrative.
It helps
to
do that.
So basically, it's great. We get a little bit of capital investment. We get new equipment, state of the art equipment, and like I said, we've got Exeter College is one of a number of capital investments. There are others, and like I said, that's going to kind of physically happen. The branding in terms of kind of the collaboration is going to be a message to young people to say this is a pipeline where you can engage in and start getting thinking about your career. But more importantly, from my perspective, it shouts a message out about the Southwest and says, look at what is happening in the Southwest, and shines a light on it, because we need to attract more funding into the Southwest from a central government perspective as well as a PR perspective, because the days of kind of sleepy Devon are gone.
It's one of the things we always say is that we are constantly
When you
speak to people, go, so just to clarify, that's you're doing that in Ilfracombe or whatever.
Yeah. So Ilfracombe,
because
your
mind is continuously blown
still
by
say
the things you're
London,
hearing.
People think of the tapes, don't they? But trust me, if you go there and see what is going on there, we were lucky enough to work in partnership with Petrock College, brought TDK Lambda around the table. We had a tour around there, and literally this is high tech digital data right at the top end, and the resistance training that they're doing there, and the investment they're making, it's absolutely brilliant for the area, but it's great for the Southwest. So your point about is this to attract inward investment, absolutely. This is all about kind of shining the light in the Southwest, getting our young people to not just go through education systems and ecosystems, but actually turning out and spinning off into jobs and staying in the area.
Yeah, rather than leave and go off to London.
We know a lot of people leave to go off to London. Mm. And this all came about on the premise that having conversations with board directors of various companies, they say, you know, we put an advert out, we might get a graduate, but in terms of application skills, they're still kind of some way behind. So we're like, well, you don't have to do that anymore. Take them on from kind of after they've done their A-levels. They've got a good education, you know, sort of base. But actually, they're 18, 19 years old now, and you can actually mould this person and shape them. And what tends to happen is they tend to stay there a couple of years and then spin off and do their own thing, don't they, because of what we said. That's fine, we can live with that. But there's some great opportunities in the Southwest. We need to attract more business, definitely attract more investment, and really shout about this. The Southwest Institute of Technology, we want everyone to be proud about it. We want everyone to be involved in it. And this is a collaboration, I think, that's got a lot to shout about in terms of what's going on locally.
Absolutely, but I just wondered as well, when is it going to start? When does it all happen? Well, when's the building coming
up? So you've
up?
Seen the building sort of work out the front we've got at the minute. Our building's due for completion in April 21, but next September is the time where we really start to see the boom. And that's where we really want to get out with the schools. We've got a CEO who's appointed, who's going out and starting to promote this in the various forums. And I've got to be honest, we've got a lot of interest and excitement from the government, because if you think about it, we've got three colleges in the actual collaborative that are actually delivering the T-levels in September. So from a government perspective, you've got a corridor of kind of colleges delivering T-levels. The same colleges and other colleges and employers are collaborating on the Institute of Technology, and you've got some world-class employers. I mean, the Met Office kind of getting behind this is absolutely significant for us. Penny is a real backer of this, really strongly believes in skills. She's an absolute amazing ambassador for kind of women coming through in leadership, as well as the fact that she's an absolute, when people say it's not a rocket science, you need to talk to Penny for kind of half an hour and realise that she's an absolute amazing in kind of rocket science. She's like a physicist and she's absolutely superb, but what a champion to have back in it in terms of kind of role model for the future. And I think like across the Southwest, we've got a lot of things bubbling under the surface that are just about to come together and make this something special.
Amazing.
Annoying interview question.
Yeah, go on.
Which is one of the things you always get asked now.
What you get paid for.
Yeah. what will success look like? How are you going to measure for you whether or not this is working and doing what it is that you want it to do?
For me, this is all about skills. It's about output, and it's not kind of. It's less about a number, and it's about, remember I said about community colleges. The colleges at heart are communities. So you need to look at this as kind of, what do the skills need in the area, and are we meeting that need? So I work really closely with Sally Basker, who's the CEO of the Science Park. She's got a forecast of growth over the next 5 years. Success looks like, as she grows over the next 5 years and more businesses move to the Science Park, they can advertise for jobs sort of locally and regionally across the Southwest, and we can attract talent from the Southwest. So we're not always having to go to London and further afield. A lot of Europeans and kind of international recruitments going on at the minute, because they can't fill the skills gap. So fundamentally for me, this isn't about hitting targets. Obviously we've got agreed targets for the DfE in terms of outputs. The most important thing for me is when an employer comes back and says, we took this apprentice on, we took this kind of high level apprentice on, or degree level apprenticeship, we took this degree student on and they worked in partnership with the Southwest Institute of Technology, and they have come and changed our business. They've added value to it. They're a valued member of staff. They've got loads to offer. Thank you. That's kind of when it all kind of comes together.
So that, because the element of the survey that's just been done by Tech Southwest about barriers to growth for the next 12 months, people do feel confident. They do expect to expand. What are they concerned about? Recruiting
100%.
The right people.
The right talent.
I talk at a lot of forums on the Science Park, and I can absolutely assure you, regardless of whether they're digital startups, whether they're high-level manufacturing, whether they're art and design creatives, there's one thing they've all got in common, there's one issue, there's one problem. People. It's simple as that. They are not going to have the people to fill this need unless we do things like this together and kind of have an uplift and a real focus on this in schools and making sure that people are starting to come through with the talent. because I can guarantee you one thing that we all have in common is we'll struggle to get these skills if we don't start doing something about it. This is a massive statement from the Southwest, working in partnership, like I said, right across the LEPs, all joining together. It's a really kind of coherent opportunity for me to attract more investment and really to get the skills coming through. And there's some amazing businesses. There really is some amazing things going on out there in terms of creatives and data analytics and information science. I mean, the stuff the Met Office are doing literally is out of this world. And obviously we've got all the work going on down in Cornwall in terms of the space developments. We've got a brilliant announcement, obviously, that the Virgin announcement with Flybe and the package they've put together. So the smart aviation that we're talking about, you know, there's the marine or automatics that are going on down there. Some really fantastic things going on.
Well, I think that's absolutely wonderful. Thank you so much
Can I ask one more question? Because I think it's only fair.
Go on then.
Take it in. It's the college's 50th birthday this year.
And it would be
remiss of us not to talk and celebrate that. So you've been here 20 years, as you mentioned at the start. I'd be curious to know what, if you can look back to when you started, what has most surprised you about the time you've been here, and part of that 50 years, and what do you think are going to be the main challenges ahead? Because you've painted a positive picture, and clearly things here are working well. But what do you think might be a bit of a bump that we're going to have to
for the next 20 years that you're going to be here?
It's interesting to ask, actually, because we were the first tertiary college in the country. So in terms of that sort of setup, that ecosystem, and we were the first one to do this 50 years ago. And I think what a tertiary college does is it gives you breadth of provision. So it does everything from apprenticeships, A-levels, a little bit of technical higher education, but it gives the city a great opportunity in terms of different options. And that's something I feel really strongly about. It's really interesting you ask, because there's a commission out at the minute on the College of the Future, and FE goes in cycles, and sometimes it gets forgotten about, and every now and then people go, well, is FE the answer? And for me, it definitely is one of the answers, like I talked about, in terms of the things that we need to join together. But for me, and I'm getting a lot of interview requests saying, what does the College of the Future look like? I think it's the wrong question, because actually if the purpose of a college is to serve the community, rather than saying what does the College of the Future look like, we actually need to be saying what does the community look like. And if you can, if you in your strategic planning can say, what is the community we serve and what does it look like in the next 5 to 10 years, it answers your question. So when people say to me, what is the role of a college going forward, it will always be to serve the needs of its community, and what we need to do is keep outward looking. So the thing I've been most amazed about that you asked me about is they kept me on for 20 years, but I've done okay about it. But the most important thing for me is when you get insular and siloed and just start looking in, that's the time that everything stops and everything collapses, because you've got to be outreaching all the time and kind of a horizon scanning, talking to the universities, working in partnership with your local colleges. Absolute employer engagement is critical. So we've got so many partnerships at the college, and it's a real accolade to the partners around us in the community that we're actually a civic partner, not just a college and education provider. So I'm really passionate and proud about the role that Exeter College plays in the city makeup as a civic partner. And I'd like to think if you went out and talked to the employers, they'd say the same thing. So from my perspective, the narrative has to change slightly. And if we can do that, and if we can listen to the community and kind of make sure that we're flexible enough to meet those needs, I think FE is about to get its time.
That's really interesting. So I guess you're saying that in order to be a community college, you have to be part of the community by having collaborations with all the businesses around, etc., so that you can make sure you have apprentices, etc., and also serve your students.
And it's also the case, you talk about Silicon Valley, for example. Well, Apple don't design the phone of the future. They work out what people want, and then they design to that. And it's this that old marketing thing about being the guide, not the hero. You know, it's not about you, is it? It's about what you can do for people.
We talk about further education having its moment, and again, in terms of things aligning, I was delighted to hear that actually in the Conservative manifesto, civic structures are named throughout. So obviously, the Prime Minister's kind of big focus is about connectivity, and obviously we know that, and that's been reflected in kind of the regional airline and the connectivity from that perspective. But for me, I think the message I'd take from kind of any from the manifesto that is actually worked and resonated with us at Exeter is civic structures. So the relationship between Exeter College and its employer partners, the university, its schools, and the Exeter City Council and Devon County Council is absolutely fundamental to everything. So from my perspective, and I've been at the college 20 years, I think I've been a senior manager for sort of 12 years, I've spent so much of my time out in the community that when I talk to people out in the community, they know Exeter College isn't about education. It provides education, but actually if there's a civic event, I'd like to think that Exeter College was invited, whether it be looking at the infrastructure or whether it be designing a city of the future. So I sit on the board at Exeter City Futures, I'm a director there. And why do I do that? Well, Exeter College is about, has got about 5,500 16 to 18 year olds. 40% come from Exeter and 60% come outside of Exeter. So how do they get into Exeter? They travel. What's one of the main issues in Exeter at the minute? Congestion and travel. Mm-hmm. So as a civic partner, it's only right that we sit on boards and talk to people about solutions from some of the issues that we're creating by being successful. So for me, from an Exeter perspective and a South West perspective, inclusive growth is absolutely essential. We have a thing at the college that the principal and I talk about all the time is good growth and bad growth. We could easily grow. Mm. We could take on another training company. We could merge with someone else. We've never done that. We've tried to grow organically and have good inclusive growth and work really hard with our partners. And what happens if you work really close with a partner is people want to travel for it. So we've got a fantastic partnership with Exeter City Football Club and Exeter Chiefs. I was walking around the college the other day and I found three girls and one of them had their foot in the chair, so I told them to take it off. And I said, where are you all from? And one was from a certain part of the county and another was from another. And I said, okay, if you don't mind me asking, what are you doing here? And they went, we're all on the Women's Exeter Chiefs Academy. Mm. Because Exeter Chiefs are about to do this women's thing. You do it in partnership. And what do they get? They get a line of sight to industry. They get a great education. They go on tour in Canada. So they toured Canada. They were telling them all about that. So the women, the year before and this year, we've got the lads going to Japan. So think about what you can do now. Yeah. You can travel into Exeter. You can get a good education. You can travel around the world. You can do something you love. And occasionally you get a person that spins out and becomes a professional. But if not, you know, yeah. What a great sort of pathway that is into kind of university or into work. So if the college of the future actually stops thinking about what the college looks like and thinks about what the landscape looks like around them, and what's right for Exeter is not right for everybody else, so it has to be about your own community, and the first thing you have to define is what your community looks like. There's a real focus on that at the minute from the central government, and Exeter's got a real great opportunity to kind of shout about this, but more importantly for me, the role that Exeter, Plymouth, Bridgewater, Barnstable are playing and committing to this South West greater entity and working in partnership with Cornwall. I honestly think now's the time, and I do think people are starting to see something in the South West and going, we better start visiting this more often because there's some really exciting things happening down there. So so we're flying the flag as ambassadors for like the Great South West. Like you said, Northern Powerhouse, Midland Engine, Great South West. That's what I want people to remember.
Rob Bosworth, your passion for the Southwest really shines through. It's very inspiring. Thank you very much for talking to us. It was a really, really interesting chat, and I feel like we could do this for about three more hours.
That. Yeah,
but
really good.
I know you've got
really
to go. So,
yeah.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to the Tribe Tech Podcast in collaboration with Stephen Scone. You can get in touch with us by tweeting @TechSWOfficial.
Today we're talking about talent in the Southwest and tech talent mainly, which is great because the Tech Southwest survey has quite a few bits of data and stats for us to pull from. And it's also talked about talent in the Southwest and how it's quite difficult to find people to fill the positions that we need here. Earlier in the show, we spoke to Rob Bosworth from Exeter College about how they're recruiting and honing talent in the Southwest. Now we're going to speak to the guys from Elixir, who describe themselves as digital pioneers, and they're responsible for some pretty interesting apps, so you should check them out. Welcome, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
Who are you?
So I'm Gavin, MD, so responsible for kind of driving awareness of the brand, bringing new projects in, that sort of thing.
Yeah, my name is Paul Bird, and I'm the creative director of Elixir, and my responsibility is heading up the design and branding department and making sure we stay on track and on vision and on brand. Yeah.
And I forgot to say, I'm Fayaz Khan, and I'm presenting today with Robert Hillier. I forgot about you.
And my lemsip's kicking in.
You definitely sound different in the second part of the podcast.
Yeah, it's a little bit Hollywood.
Yeah. So in the Tech Southwest survey, what we found was quite a few people don't know that opportunities exist here.
Mm.
Why?
Well, a lot of it is down to awareness, and just because what we found, particularly when we started our business over 7 years ago, was that there's a lot of hidden pockets in the Southwest, and there's a lot of hidden creative talent, and it's all about, okay, how can you really shine a spotlight on some of the opportunities that are happening here? And so one of our passions was to create Digital Plymouth, which is one of a community movement that basically said, right, you know, we want to unite ourselves together, and we want to put ourselves as a flag in the Southwest and say, no, we are a digital tech cluster, and we do represent something, and we want to make sure that when other people visit the city and the Southwest, they also see the great things that are happening. And so that's one of the challenges, really, is just trying to get the word out there, because everyone's very good at marketing to themselves, being very insular, but getting it externally out there for the field can often be the challenge.
Gavin, can you tell me more about Digital Plymouth?
Yeah, so Digital Plymouth for us is it's a quarterly meetup, really, of digital and creative people from across the region. And we say people because it's really important that we're not just talking about people who are specifically in those creative businesses. So we have people who are from the council, we also have people from other large organisations like Schneider presented the other day. All these companies have people in those businesses that have those creative and technology roles that want to see what's going on across the region and across the city, but don't necessarily get that in their own environment. So they come out to our meetups and get engaged with the whole community and have those kind of conversations. I think what Paul was saying is interesting. You know, we have this challenge where we have quite a few big employers in the city that no one knows about, and they tend to kind of show their heads where they want to recruit. But the point we're trying to drive is actually come out, have a conversation, and raise that awareness before that's happening, so that when you're ready to recruit, people already know who you are.
Well, how would that help? Because, I mean, surely that's just, it's the same thing.
I think getting out there early days gives people an expectation, whereas if you're understanding and know a brand already and you know they're engaged, you're more likely to be open to kind of having those conversations. Where if they're fresh and coming in, you might not respond to that straight away. You might not respond to that job app when you see it if you don't know who they are.
Yeah, and I suppose this is what makes it quite important with things like Plymouth University and Exeter College and all those educational facilities linking with big employers so that they can help students get into those businesses.
Yeah, exactly. And it's also a confidence thing as well. So a lot of students coming into the industry, they're not used to speaking to people in big businesses or getting out there networking. And these are things that, I mean, now we take for granted, but back then, would we have thought about going to meetups, meeting businesses, and, you know, probably not. But it's the people that do get out and meet and create those connections where they can almost get a taste of the flavour of the industry and be like, okay, yeah, I like this. I want to try and get an opportunity working here or there. So that's another thing that Digital Plymouth brings to the
table. Is it because it seems inaccessible to get into the tech sector? It's inaccessible to get in touch with TDK Lambda or you guys or whoever? You know, is that the reason? And how do we make things more accessible?
I think it's being there. I think that's got to being there, be present, and showing people the business is all about people. And that's the great thing about these kind of events. You've got people coming, networking, and having conversations, and actually you get to meet these people from these different businesses. Whereas if you're always behind the kind of the corporate wall, it becomes a really unapproachable thing to be able to have. So having these events, these network events, which we do have loads of them across the Southwest, is really key to offer the opportunity for businesses to network and meet those people, as well as the students to come and have those conversations.
Do you think, looking at the survey, one of the main areas which were identified as a barrier to growth in this year for companies was the access to talent? And we've covered quite a lot of that off in terms of what's been done about that, but how much do you think is there still the mentality in the Southwest that as a young person
if you feel creative and dynamic and skilled in this sector, that your future lies elsewhere. So you, as a matter of course, you simply don't look closer to home.
I think that's fair. I mean, that's ultimately when we started up. We graduated out of the university and started our business straight up out of university. And we saw our colleagues and our friends disappear off to the bigger cities because that's where the opportunities were. We kind of started building lives here, so we kind of stayed here and actually started seeing the potential of what's around. But there is definitely a bigger draw to the other cities. What I would always also say is it's saturated. It's very saturated in some of the bigger cities in regards to getting involved and actually being able to have real impact. And that's what we saw. We saw starting a business here, there's potential for us to have real impact and really build a name here. It's challenging in regards to winning work, I think, here, in regards to being so far.
Do you get asked that question? Do you get asked why you're in Plymouth, why you're not in Bristol, or why you're not in London?
Yeah, all the time. And that's another reason why we wanted to set up Digital Plymouth, was to be able to go, actually, if we can build enough of a brand for the city, people won't go, why are you here? People go, oh, yeah, there's a really good tech scene there. And it's part of that kind of, they call it cathedral thinking, when you're trying to build something which is ultimately going to carry on building, won't really get there until you're gone. If you can start building that early days, we will get to a point where people recognise the city as being in that position, but there is something going on here.
And not just Plymouth, actually, the whole region, because actually we have such wonderful things happening here, and it is a shame that people don't know about it, but hopefully this podcast is halfway to helping that. One of the things that came out of the survey was that the pay did not match London. I mean, how do we combat that?
Well, different areas for one. I mean, the cost of living in London is a lot more, for one. So the salaries are bound to be higher. So there is a balance there. Whereas down here, the cost of living versus the salary that you get is, again, there's a balance there. And I suppose you get those lucky few people that have a London job, but they can live in the southwest. Mm-hmm. And those are the people who are, you know, thriving. And we actually see a lot of we saw this actually over the past 5 years, where there are larger tech businesses moving down to the southwest because they knew they could have lower overheads on their business rates, on their resources, so then they could keep all their billable team down here, and then they could just focus their sales up in London. And that was just the way they worked, and it was just a very good model.
And of course, we also have quality of life here because, you know, the beach is, you know, 20 minutes away, and then you've got Dartmoor, Exmoor, and Cornwall's just around the corner. And I mean, why would you want to live anywhere else anyway?
Yeah, exactly. I think we've seen that as well. There's a lot of, we do see people coming back. And for me, I don't have an issue with people, and it might be controversial to say this, I don't have an issue with people leaving the city or leaving the region. Actually, we need people to leave. The biggest, what we should be measuring, how long does it take for people to come back? If it's 20 years, we've got a problem. Whereas if we can reduce the amount of time that people take from leaving to coming back, and they can come and they bring those expertise, bring those connections, it's a really valuable thing for us to be able to maximise on. But yeah, make it an attractive place for people to want to stay.
I find it quite interesting, actually. This is because I don't have that kind of attachment to anywhere at all. But I notice that people from Devon and Cornwall tend to want to live in Devon and Cornwall, and all they think about when they leave is Devon and Cornwall. And it's really weird because even Robert's born in Plymouth, well, Totnes, but the whole time that we were away, we went to Dubai and we lived in Manchester, and he just kept thinking about coming back to Plymouth. And finally we are back in Devon, but I mean, it ground me down. We had to come back.
Yeah, it's a weird one for us, isn't it? Because none of our kind of directors, all the people who found the business are from the region, so we all came. We came down here to study and all stayed.
But why? What makes this place so?
Well, it's the beauty of the place, really. So you've got the beaches, you've got the moors, and so you've got this kind of active lifestyle, which gives you this balance between, you know, going surfing or sailing on the weekend, or going for nice walks with your dog, or even farming, in Gavin's case, you know, on your allotment. It's just a really nice air, and not to get all hippie-ish, but aura about this area. And it's nice to be able to have that balance of, you know, you work hard, but you also get the opportunity to enjoy what the Southwest has to offer.
Do you find when you're, for example, say with the City Council, or even meeting with the university, that in terms of their measures of success, which will be based around quite obvious growth figures and economic GVA and the creation of long-term jobs, and even the way the university will have to measure its success, about you saying going away, they will have to prove how many people are staying within the area. That's one of their metrics they'll use to say how successful they've been. Do you think we're still maybe working on old measures of what's good for the local economy, rather than thinking about the 2030 economy where we're going to be portfolio working, having two or three jobs, expecting to be freelance? Is that filtered down into what you need from people who can help your business actually thrive?
I think it's changing. We're quite lucky with the stuff that we've been doing with Digital Plymouth to be able to be engaging with both the universities and the general education establishment as well as the council. And there does seem to be a lot more work in kind of trying to be more progressive. I do think there's always going to be that challenge as to where they're going to get their money from. I mean, obviously business rates is a key aspect of that, and in order to get big business rates you need big buildings to be let out to big companies. So it creates a whole new challenge. I think there's definitely more work to be done on kind of directing us towards a more kind of forward-thinking approach. More work on attracting the right businesses to the region, the right employers to the region that are going to add that sort of long-term value. It's a changing market, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's, I mean, Plymouth is doing that. They have plans on how they're, so you've probably seen it about this year, where this year is a big important year at the Mayflower 400, which all marks the sale of the Mayflower from Plymouth to Plymouth.
In the Spectator top 20 cities to visit in 2020, Plymouth was number two in the world.
I know, that was shocking.
Right. Yeah, but because of the celebrations and the number of people that expected to be here.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly that. And then just within the city centre alone, they've got over £1 billion worth of investment coming into the city to try and make it a place where it's really attractive, where there's office spaces, there's accommodation, and again, trying to become more forward-thinking. And I suppose what the city's trying to do is trying to build that long-lasting legacy. So using the Mayflower as almost a launch pad to try and test things, get people down here, get them to see the best of what Plymouth has to offer, and then that will continue on a legacy.
So does that mean that you feel as a company with big plans, big ambitions, you will want people, you want to attract and retain talent, do you feel satisfied that the investment in infrastructure is going to do that for you?
In Plymouth, I mean, it's actually an area we're working on. So when it comes to tech support and startups or anything like that, I mean, there's still a lot of work to be done in Plymouth. So for example, the what used to be around there used to be places like the Formation Zone, the Design Hub at the Art College, and these are really good launch pads for people to start thinking a little bit entrepreneurial, but they're starting to lose some of these support networks, which is a shame. So it's looking at what we can do to really, okay, we need almost like a set squared equivalent down in Plymouth, and the more we can bring the likes of Tech Nation or people like that down here to create those programs or frameworks, then the more we can make something happen. But for us, yeah, it's definitely about, okay, who are coming out of the colleges or universities, who can we take on? It was interesting to see about the trends for this year, so the top three trends, so one of them being creativity and collaboration. That's like our number one goal in our business is, okay, how can we help bigger businesses to be more creative? How can we get people going from, so if they're launching a product, get them going from idea to pioneer and become the next big thing in the Southwest or in the UK anyway?
I think it's also adapting the change in the model a little bit as well. Like if you can't hire developers, why are you trying to, or where are you trying to hire the developers? So we see quite a lot of companies that are starting up where there is no central hub for the business. They're built up purely of people who work in remote. And you can see from being in our office, there's 50% of people are in the office, 50% of people are remote working in other places. And I think that's a changing metric, is you hire the talent you can locally, where possible. And if you need people who have specialist skills, then you go where those people are. Doesn't mean you have to move a whole office over there necessarily to do that. And we're seeing a lot of, so our side's been creativity driven, we're seeing a lot of art talent coming from the art college. We've also, even the younger level, has got the creative school as well. So we've got, if we can drive on looking at that creative talent, it might be that development wise, we just have to look elsewhere in regards to building that team.
So it sounds like the infrastructure is there to recruit homegrown talent, which was one of the things in the report that people found difficult, but I suppose now it's slowly building up.
Yeah.
How do we keep them?
Making an attractive proposition for them to stay, I think.
But and then how do we do that? What can we do to make sure people? Because I mean, I think we all know. Yes,
yeah.
The Southwest is a great place to live. Quite a lot of it is, you know, it's very rural, but then it's also quite cosmopolitan in some parts. How do we make?
No, it's not just money, is it? I mean,
it's not.
I mean, if you're 21, then you know Dartmoor may not cut it.
Yeah.
For you, you need to feel as if you are part of
something
where things, you know, where things are going to happen, and that requires a lot of people working together to pull that.
I think it needs to happen sooner. I think that's the biggest challenge. So when we were talking about this kind of need for an innovation / co-working hub, it's a conversation that we're having. Now, by creating a space where people at a young age can go and see what's happening, which we don't really have that at the moment, you can get people excited about the city at an early age, and it's less about, oh, we have to go somewhere else. It's like, actually, no, stuff's happening here. And at a younger age, they're saying, actually, I want to stay, I want to see things that are happening. And I think that's the really important factor. We're seeing that from the same age, like 7 to 11, is the time you really need to engage with people in regards to pushing their career prospects. Now, the biggest challenge with that means they're not going to be in going into employment for another decade and a half. So you have to have a real long-term strategy in regards to looking at creating talent from a hiring point of view. So if you want to engage, you want to engage at those ages, but be prepared to kind of wait that time for those.
So create the relationship from the time they're, well, babies.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get them excited about what the city has to offer.
Mm-hmm.
And create a space where people
right.
can, a publicly accessible space where people from at any age can come in and see the exciting stuff that's going on.
And also the key point I think that you've just made as well is that you're getting the people you need from the art college.
Mm-hmm.
So that breakdown of saying, oh, you know, like, so you will start thinking, I don't know what it means to work in the tech sector, but I would quite like to work creatively. And most of the stuff I've done so far has been digitally, because that's how I work. Well, that means you're in the tech sector.
Yeah.
And it's breaking down that language whereby life is here and tech is over here, and I can't see the bridge.
But it's actually the same
two.
Thing.
Yeah. Yeah. There is an interest in perception. So Plymouth is quite, it's really strong in the construction industry. So we have the Plymouth Manufacturing Group, and there are businesses within this group who say, you know, okay, yes, we do construction, but we also do like 3D modeling, VR, you know, they play around with so much interest in tech. And they're like, you know, how can we change this perception that, you know, you don't have to be building websites and apps to be a tech company, you can be in other industries.
In the same way the games industry needs script writers and character development and, you know, people who've done English degrees are as important as people who can do computer science.
Yeah, exactly.
Seeing that breakdown, isn't it? It's really important. And obviously, if you are, and I don't know if primary school teachers have those skills, because why should they?
I think the main thing for us, and one of our main things we talk about interviewing your candidates, is looking at what their drive is to learn externally. That's one thing that university, like you need to be taught more in school, is how to learn off your own accord and your free and back. Technology is changing so quickly, we can't expect primary teachers to keep on top of it. But what we can do is expect people to say to their students that you need to learn, you need to be driving. We want you to find your passion and drive from your passion's point of view. I was really lucky in that my parents always said to me, do whatever makes you happy, go into the role that you want to. You see so many people who are driving force into careers they don't want to go to. So we can get people passionate and driven and wanting to go into the right careers, and that's where their passion goes. They're more likely to want to learn, more likely to drive, and more likely to succeed in those careers.
Are you suggesting school visits? Sorry, Dan.
Yeah, 100%. So we're having a conversation. I was having a conversation a couple of weeks ago about with a couple of people who work in the education, who work high up in education, saying that how can we engage more from a digital point of view with schools to try and drive that. I think school visits are really important. It's finding the right people to engage at the right time. I don't think we're the right company to do that.
Mm.
I think with the work that we're doing, but it's finding the right companies who are at the right point So it's the companies that are building mobile games, it's the companies that are building VR experiences. They're the ones you want to be going into schools because that's the thing that they're interested in and they're passionate about.
Yeah.
If you can get them going in the early days and get them excited about that, that's when they're going to build skills.
So, and does that mean as well for you that if you're looking at people who are creative and driven and you want to keep learning and you want to keep learning new skills, whether or not there's a direct vocational line between what you're doing at 17 into exactly what you need, is that less important than people who are still developing and thinking and willing to learn?
I think so. I think for us the most important thing, when you're a small team, bringing anyone in is about fit. If someone could be brilliant at what they do but they don't fit in with the team, in which case they're going to be more disruptive than good. So you want someone who's going to be willing to, everyone in a team has to be willing to be driven and want to learn.
Mm.
So if they're not at that point at the moment, they can still come in and go, actually, you know, you've got the drive, we think you can catch up quickly enough. So if we can find those people, they're the people who are going to make the most impact in the business, that those people who want to grow and that see there's potential to grow within an organisation as well, and there's an opportunity to grow and develop, is going to be really important.
Mm. Yeah, because that's very much an ethos of our business where we try and encourage people to not just do well at their jobs here, but also if there's side topics that they are passionate about and that they want to pursue, we're like, yes, go and do it. You know, go to that conference that you're really excited about, or try and say, so we've got one of our developers, she's really into, what was the topic again? Best way to describe it?
Look at the environmental impact of digital.
Yeah, so looking at the environmental impact of digital, so she is creating a whole talk around this topic and looking at how we as a business can be more environmental friendly, which is really exciting. And
mm-hmm.
yeah, she's so excited and she's getting these talks lined up into this year.
Where are they for?
So
where's the platform for the talks?
So FutureSync, so the conference
yes,
is happening in April,
right.
The first one lined up. And some really good, interesting speakers lined up for that in April, so she'll be really, yeah, pretty excited about
that. That is very interesting,
yeah.
So we'll look out for that.
So do you know, yeah, so FutureSync has been going now for nearly 3 years and actually stemmed from being inspired by Digital Plymouth. So when Digital Plymouth was started, we used to run our own conferences and we brought on people to try and help us, because we had about 160 people in the audience. We had 16 speakers from all across the UK. It was like a fantastic way of uniting the whole city.
A sort of TEDx.
Yeah, like a TEDx, yeah. And we got the Plymouth City Council involved. We got the university and the art college collaborating together to make this event happen. And it was just a real good buzz for the city. And we did about two of these. And then after that, FutureSync kind of spawned up. And it was amazing because it meant that we could then support FutureSync, and so Tony Edwards and Marina Trethaway are the two people that are driving FutureSync, and they have huge plans on where they want to take things. And so they've got about 21 speakers in FutureSync this year getting lined up.
Is Tony Edwards from Software Cornwall?
Yeah,
one of the best people to know probably in Cornwall if you're
yes.
in Texas.
In terms of the work you're doing around collaboration, that's clearly having an impact.
Mm.
For your business in 2020, what are the challenges and what are some of the opportunities that you've identified?
So for us, it's always going to be growing and getting those bigger and bigger projects and bigger clients.
Mm.
As we've kind of grown over the last 7 years, the scale of projects we've started working on have increased. So it's for us, it's getting into bigger brands and building that level of trust that we can as an agency.
And what is it that holds you back? What are the things you think you need to identify to?
Scale is one of the challenges we've found. So we're a team of there's seven people in our core team. So if you want to deliver a large project, that creates a challenge. So in June, we brought on a new director, and he has probably one of the longest running software companies in the UK. And also has a company which is a development team in Warsaw, over 400 strong. So what that means is when we're pitching for work now, we can say, well, we have a really good strong development, a really good strong product team here, but we also have a development team to back it up if you need to build large scale projects. So it's about, back down to the point of, if you can't hire and you need to be able to be adaptable and scale up based on a project basis, then you have to kind of change the model and change the way that you're working a little bit to kind of deliver and kind of manage those projects. So it's an exciting year for us. I mean, it's been a crazy year last year, so we brought on Rob Breach joined our team, who's been at IBM for 20 years, And then we've got Ed as a shareholder on, so they're two quite big heavy hitters to bring in 1 year. So this year's going to be pretty exciting. Now we've got those two guys fully integrated into the team and building things to go forward with, so we're pretty excited.
So what about you, Paul?
So opportunities in 2020. So there's a couple of areas. So the first one that we mentioned earlier was FutureSync Conference. We're really excited about that. So that's happening in April. Alongside that, and around a similar time, there is the Southwest Design and Digital Awards, which is the student awards, and it's basically a Southwest Awards, and it covers graphic design, website design, could be conceptual product design, and it's targeting all the colleges, creative colleges and universities in the Southwest to get students to submit projects. And then these students get the opportunity to present their work in front of a panel of industry experts and say, right, this is what we're doing. And then they can get feedback. The judges can say, yeah, we really like what you're doing here. This is how you can improve. And then at the end of it, there's a few winners, but the ultimate winner can come away with potentially £2,000.
Wow. That is fantastic. Yeah. How do they apply? Can they just do it on their own?
Yes, they can apply online. So you can go to the website, there's swddawards.co.uk. So the awards is run by a company called Procter & Stevenson, based in Bristol. That's a really exciting opportunity.
Wonderful. Good luck, guys. Paul and Gavin, thank you so much for being on our podcast. It's Tribe Tech. And also thank you, Stephen Scone, for supporting us in this podcast as well. And thanks, Robert. Hope you're feeling a bit better.
Yeah, good.
Tune into the podcast next month as well. We're also going to be doing a blog, hopefully pretty soon, a very short one, just for all the bits that we couldn't get into the actual podcast, because we do have to cut bits out, sadly. Sorry, guys. But also, I just want to say, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes and Spotify and wherever else you get your podcast, because that's really important. We love the numbers. Thank you very much for listening. See you next time.
The Tribe Tech Podcast. In collaboration with Stephen Scone. You can get in touch with us by tweeting @TechSWOfficial.